this all goes back to the Carl Urban Film Festival. Welcome to Still Untitled, the Adam Savage Project. I'm Will.
I'm Adam.
And I'm Norm.
And we have a special guest today. My mom. You would know her as Karin Savage, but she is my mom.
I feel like I guess we did a talking, like the proto talking room.
The proto talking room was you and me talking to mom. Yeah. And she's been on the podcast before.
Yes.
Oh, that's right. That's right. When Norm was gone one time, I think,
yes,
right?
I think we were talking about your childhood.
Yes.
It was your cousin.
It was Kelly,
your cousin came in.
Yes.
Was Kelly here with mom?
No.
I'm sure there's all these people.
This is
Adam's.
Don't
mom.
You like to hear this? This
this is the way it works.
Savage.
This is, yeah, bring
we're
your
making
child
the
to work
sausage
day.
Right in front of you.
Exactly. Well, welcome back.
Thank you very much.
Mom comes out about 4 or 5 times a year. Mm-hmm. And spends a long weekend with us, and we've had a lovely weekend.
Well, you picked the worst San Francisco weather I've seen in almost 20 years of living here.
But let's talk about this for a second. Let's talk about this worst San Francisco weather, because I've been absolutely so happy.
Oh, yeah.
Like, this is the thing is, we had torrential rain this weekend, which is, you're used to this. New York gets this when
yes.
it gets rainy.
Weekly.
Yeah.
It's like summer afternoons, right? It just boom.
But, and what, the, you know, the downpour is, it's a deluge. It starts pouring big fat raindrops and pours like that for days. That never happens in San Francisco.
Well, like 1 month a year.
Even the 1 month a year, it's mostly that piddling little pissing rain that San Francisco calls yeah. rain. So, I mean, I've been here for 26 years now, and big fat rainstorms are absolutely the anomaly. But this weekend was just three whole days of that.
Like there have been times in the past, I've talked about this in the podcast before, so I won't go into it. But like there have been times in the past when I've seen it rain enough that when you're driving up Alamany Road, the storm sewers would get backed up and water was geysering out of the holes in the manholes.
Flash flood
like
in San Francisco.
20 feet straight yeah. up in the air. Looked like a Hollywood effect.
It's great if you're in a house, you can see it and you feel warm or you can be in a blanket
yeah.
and that's fine. But also, I get worried because I don't know if our city can handle it. People start driving poorly. There are houses that
people drive incredibly poorly.
And there are many places that aren't in the city that aren't built for rain because we never expect
well,
to have it.
And like I live at the bottom of a valley with giant muddy hills on both sides.
Yeah.
So, you know,
houses are falling off of the cliffs.
That happens all the time.
Happens when you build a house on a cliff.
Yeah.
But I was approaching the freeway overpass on Mission Street yesterday, and rain is pouring down, but also every time someone drives by on the freeway, this cascade waterfall pours off, and it's unbelievable. It's like a Michael Bay effect.
But as Norm said, the larger problem is that most people here panic if there's like a light mist when they're driving.
We live in a city where people slow down going through the tunnel on Treasure Island.
Yeah.
Because it's a tunnel.
You have to make a turn at the end. It's a little bit tricky.
We call it carpool tunnel syndrome.
Carpool tunnel vision.
You're welcome, everybody.
Do you know about the casual carpool? This is a complete tangent. Have
yes,
you heard of this before?
I do.
What is the casual carpool?
Do you not know?
It's pre-Uber.
Yeah.
So is this real ride sharing?
It is real ride sharing.
Yeah, like if you ride across the Bay Bridge and you wanted to take advantage of the carpool or maybe not drive, you could pull up to a designated spot at like the West Oakland BART station.
Mm-hmm.
You pick a random person up. They get in the car. Etiquette says you have no human interaction whatsoever.
Don't introduce yourself.
No conversing.
There's an understanding that you're
yes.
a part of the system now where you can go bypass everyone.
You're a human body that allows you to bypass paying for fare and getting in the carpool
uh-huh.
lane.
And for yes. that privilege, please don't talk.
No speaking.
So my
no way.
My friend.
That can't still exist.
Well,
they still do it.
Do they still do it?
Still
I thought that
it.
Uber Pool might have usurped it, but my friend Ebony did it for years. She lived in El Cerrito, lives still in El Cerrito, and was commuting to work at Wells Fargo a few years back, and wrote about, she tweeted every day what kind of car she was in. So it was like, it was a sport. Ebony's kind of amazing. She's a wonderful writer and one of my best friends. And she would just tweet these very funny tweets every single morning about like the state of both the car and the person driving it.
So I found out about it because the guy that Norm and I used to work with, Gordon Maung, always did it every day. And then he started carpooling with his kid because he was bringing his kid to daycare in San Francisco to his mom's house.
Mm-hmm.
And he would drop his son off. But he was like, I don't know if I'm okay with like, this felt okay picking up a rando on the side of the road when it was just me. But when my kid's in the back seat, it's all of a sudden a little more like,
I have a question.
It's too close to hitchhiking.
I would think so.
Yeah.
I think that would make you nervous. Before you left the rain, I wanted to say one thing about where the north, I mean, the east where I live and rain. Mm-hmm. I live in Westchester County.
Okay.
And Westchester County has all the superhighways are old riverbeds. We have the Sawmill Riverbed. We have the Sprain Riverbed. And we have the Bronx Riverbed. And even though I've lived there for almost 50 years, every time it rains, they flood. And they flood the road. And in 50 years, Westchester has never figured out what to do about this.
Well, this is one of those things that one of those things that people here don't understand. Like when I was in I learned to drive on the East Coast. And we were in mountain country. So one of the rules they tell you is that you never, ever drive a car into a flooded anything. Ever.
Ever.
It's like the worst thing you can do.
Yes.
And people do it here all the time. I think they must not tell them not to do that. But this is your PSA.
It's
if
like
you don't know
happens?
This.
You, so you rarely see it. Everything is fascinating. Oh, the rain, it's nice. Oh, you drive under the waterfall and the bridge. Oh, what happens to that puddle? I just want to see the splash.
Yeah, it's not like Jamie driving the motorcycle across the lake.
Nope. It's, you know, and if you're behind me, I've got a snorkel. I can drive past my hood ornament in the water.
Actually, it is quite like that with the hydroplane.
Well, if they're lucky, they hydroplane across the flood. If they're not, then... swim.
I did have this thought about a week ago. There was a windstorm at night with hail that was so loud it woke me up.
Yeah.
And I woke up with this thought. My house is merely a shelter. Well, it was terrifying.
Yeah.
So I live about 3/4 of a mile from the ocean, which means that we get the wind that comes off of the ocean and it basically starts in Japan and then ends up here. So we get.
Does it have an accent?
No, it's pretty intelligible.
How often do you have tsunamis?
We have had to evacuate twice for tsunamis in about 10 years of living there.
Really?
But they never actually, you know, it was after the Fukushima earthquake in 5 years ago now? Mm-hmm. I think it was just the anniversary last
week. Was there a traffic jam or were you kicking your neighbors in the teeth?
Everybody
to get
just
out?
Went up to like you. Basically, you go up like 8 feet because it's you go up the nearest hill, basically
I
eight
see.
Or 10 feet. So you drive up and watch, hopefully, your neighborhood not getting sucked out to sea. But on a couple of big earthquakes, they've had tsunami warnings and the little siren comes on. Everybody, you know, grabs your photo album and the dog and you get in the car and you drive up to the neighbor's house on the hill.
The photo album and the dog.
Yeah.
Really, in that order.
I mean, now I'd probably get the kid first, but we haven't had one since she was around.
You should have a proper go bag.
We have a go bag now.
Oh, okay. Do you?
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
Really?
Yeah.
What's in it?
Earthquake zone. So it's food. Let's see, gold. No. Seeds.
Two pistols.
The kids.
No, the kids. We get the kid.
Ben's dream.
Analgesic stuff like that. Food and water for a day for all of us. Dog food for a week.
So you're going to live for a day, and the dog's going to live for a week.
Well, I figure
they can eat the dog.
It carries its own
weight.
She's
only 15 pounds. She wouldn't last that long. She's a little fatty.
They never did that in the movies.
The assumption is that that you know FEMA comes in and gives food for the humans, but the dog can go to hell in the eyes of the federal government.
Right.
So
speaking of tsunamis, we watched a movie last night that Julia was trolling around on the internet and found this Norwegian film called The Wave.
Okay.
Was it on Netflix?
Is it about the 2003?
No. So this is about the fact that in the fjords of Norway, where our people are from, in the fjords of Norway, you can occasionally get rock slides, and rock slides have caused some of the world's largest waves. Mm-hmm. And so this is a town that's at the end of a fjord. And there's like an unstable rock. An unstable rock formation at the other end. And I'll tell you, the trailer is crazy riveting, like super, super thrilling. It is a Norwegian film. The cast is great. The script is great. The premise is when they hear the siren, it's 10 minutes until the town gets destroyed.
Is it a psychological experiment or?
No.
Okay.
No, it's a documentary.
It's not a documentary.
Okay.
It's a narrative fictional film.
Interesting.
And it's great. In terms of the budget value, it's clear that they shot it for not a lot because there's all the special I don't want to spoil this, but a good portion of the special effects are in the trailer.
Okay. Hmm.
It's not a spoiler alert because when push comes to shove in the movie, We had a whole room full of people like yelling at the screen.
It was very intense.
Is it like a horror movie where the monster is a wave?
No, it's like Das Boot.
Oh, okay.
It's like that kind of scary, right? Like,
But the funny thing was, before we saw it, Julia was wondering, since you only have 10 minutes before the wave hits, how they do a whole movie with only this 10 minutes.
Right.
Well, and so this is one where I was, so this is what I was wondering. It's like, okay, clearly it's going to come sometime between the end of act one and the beginning of act three, right? Yeah. Like you can't put it later.
You have to establish characters.
You have to establish characters and then something has to happen. But you can't have it be post the transition between act two and three because you need some sort of denouement.
Well, it could be, I mean, it could be that all of act two is from the alert to when the thing, just with different people's stories being told.
Exactly. Yeah.
And that turns out to be close to what it is. And it's great. The performances are great. It's a really fun film. It's pretty cheap. It's on iTunes.
What's it called? It's called The Wave?
The Wave.
Okay. Without spoiling the plot, would you say it's about how people deal with crises?
No.
They would totally, remake this film here with The Rock.
I saw that. San Andreas was awesome.
It's a basic action adventure film. Okay.
I would say there's one fascinating thing about it, though. It's a very interesting, a very sweet little family that we get very emotionally invested in, and we want them desperately to live. And we go through all these machinations about whether they're going to live or not. But towards the end, the mother does something totally stunning, which I won't talk about.
Okay.
And it's completely, it's so stunning, it almost stops you dead in your tracks. Like, and it's never mentioned again.
No.
Huh. Well, speaking of how people deal with crises, I saw 10 Cloverfield Lane over the weekend. I know you haven't seen it yet, so I don't want to go into plot.
The whole trick about 10 Cloverfield Lane is that everything about it is a secret.
Yeah, I mean,
Know what it is.
It's a J.J. Abrams film. He directed a film a few years ago called Cloverfield.
He produced it.
Matt Reeves directed it. And J.J. Abrams is known for his secrecy. So he directed a new Star Wars film also. And his whole production company is all about secrecy, from the making of the film to the releasing of it. So this new movie called 10 Cloverfield Lane, the trailer came out for maybe...
Like three months ago, a
month before the film's release,
which is rare.
Yeah. Like it came out of nowhere; people didn't even know it was being made. And then the name of the film harkens back to the previous film, which was a monster movie. So people thought, "Oh, could this be a sequel? How are they connected?" And the film is a first-time director, but it's wonderfully thrilling. And it is. This movie is about how people deal with crises.
The thing that was interesting about the trailer is it kind of unpacked in a really interesting way. So you've seen the trailer? I've seen the trailer, yeah.
Have you seen the trailer?
No.
Okay, so I don't know if...
Okay, we shouldn't talk about it then. Yeah.
you're in the rare situation. If you haven't even seen the trailer, it's great.
I should just go see the movie. All right, all right.
Mary Elizabeth Winstead's in it, so I can just tell you. And John Goodman and Mary Lewis is the one said. She played Ramona Flowers in the Scott Pilgrim.
Like Scott Pilgrim.
Scott Pilgrim movie.
I watched Scott Pilgrim.
She was in...
I didn't like that movie.
I said you didn't like it.
No, I didn't like
it. Death Proof. She played the cheerleader who gets left behind.
Oh, yes.
But she's a wonderful actress. She was in the Thing prequel.
The cheerleader who gets left behind. That might be the most disturbing part about Death Proof, because it's pretty clear that the creepy bastard that she's left with has designs upon her.
And she's left there by her friends.
It's a transactional nature, that whole...
Her
friends are like, you're going to stay here. We're going to go drive the car.
In an exploitation film? No.
Yes. Really? Yes.
But she... people are saying that her performance in this is reminiscent of... like Sigourney Weaver in Alien.
Oh, cool.
Which was wonderful.
So
that's really cool.
That's the only thing I'll say about it.
Nice.
Oh, no, go ahead.
I just think every time I hear Sigourney Weaver's name, I met her once here in Hayes Valley. She was very nice. But the thing I'm most amazed is that when she and Chris Hardwick met, he asked to take a picture. And because she's giant, she's really tall. Chris, who is not tall, said, let's take a prom picture. So the picture they have is of her behind him with her hands around him.
Oh, my God. That's the best thing ever.
I know.
I watched Ghostbusters and Ghostbusters 2 the other day.
Oh, wow.
Because there was all this hubbub. Yeah. This is just the weirdest, least structured podcast of all time.
These are things you do when it's raining.
Right. Yeah.
Right?
That's true.
Like, you know, what do you do when it's raining
outside? We did a puzzle.
There you go.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. So
we gathered people over, we made popcorn and watched a movie.
I loaded up everybody into VR and we all, you know, walked around
Mars,
space aliens and stuff.
There you go.
So I watched Ghostbusters and Ghostbusters 2 while I was testing stuff the other day. And like, because, well, the trailers, there's been a couple of trailers for the new movie.
Yeah.
They've been really, really controversial in certain circles on the internet. And I hadn't watched any of them until the international trailer hit, I think, last week. And I watched and I was like, man, this looks exactly like I would expect a Ghostbusters movie to look. It's about a bunch of nerds who have a weird job and then do interesting things. And there's archetypes playing against each other. Mm-hmm. So, and people were like, you're out of your mind. You're a bad person. When I posted this on Twitter. So then I went back and watched the first two movies again, because it's probably been 10 or 12 years since I watched them. And those movies, especially the first one, is much darker than I remembered it being. Like, it's very much about outsiders, people who are outside both the university structure and normal society. And then all of a sudden there's this rise, this celebrity that happens to them because of this weird job that they happen
to have.
They're
kind of conspiracy theorists.
Yeah, they're
right,
nutty.
No, they're nut jobs. And they're vindicated against your expectations in the film.
Well, but it's also not in the like typical Ivan Reitman era, Bill Murray. It is diametrically opposed to Caddyshack, right?
Right. It's not funny for funny's sake.
It's very clever, but there's not a lot of like laugh out loud moments. And maybe that in the theater you'd have laughs. I did a lot of chuckling
when he says this man has no dick.
That's
Bill Murray though.
That's every time. That's funny.
That's Bill Murray.
Yes.
I think there's a difference, and if we're going to talk about the Ghostbusters trailer, I have no problem with the premise of the movie.
Lady Ghostbusters.
Right, and it being a reboot of the Ghostbusters. Okay. I don't know how it ties to the original, if it does at all, but the thing that I didn't get from the trailer that I hope is in the film is the earnestness of the characters. So Dan Aykroyd, Bill Murray, and less so Bill Murray, but more Dan Aykroyd and Egon.
Harold Ramis.
Their characters, they believe, they play it straight the entire time.
Yeah.
They're scientists, they're conducting, and that's the comedy. It's almost like Monty Python. There's playing, you know, we're doing this experiment, and it's real ghosts and plasma, and that's funny.
They're 80s nerds too. Yeah. Like it's a time when there was a movie called literally Revenge of the Nerds,
and that's exactly where they were.
And that's where
older
they were.
Generation. Yeah,
so that's I hope that comes out in the new film.
I watched Ghostbusters a bunch of it in a hotel about just a few weeks ago, and I was surprised how well it held up. It's
super
genuinely
good.
Wonderful.
The effects work really well. The thing that dated it for me more than anything else, even more than the cars and the 80s mid 80s accoutrement, was that everybody was smoking all the time. Like they were just, it was just sick. Like they're riding in the car. There's this amazing scene where Dan Aykroyd and Ernie Hudson are in the car talking about whether this is the revelation, whether this is the biblical apocalypse. And they're both just constantly smoking cigarettes while they're having this. And I couldn't focus on the,
wow.
Yeah.
I just want to interject that some of the ghost idea is still alive and well, because my best experience with it was I raised Adam in a very big old house, built in 1910, and many floors, and a furnace which was always breaking down. And so I got to know the furnace people quite well. And one time the furnace man came to fix yet another problem. And as he was coming upstairs, he said, Mrs. Savage, may I speak to you for a minute? And I said, yes. And he said, I just want to tell you something. He said, I'm what they call a sensitive. And I said, really? He said, yes. And I just want to tell you, there are no ghosts in this house.
Oh.
I said, really? And he said, yes, I can absolutely guarantee it. And I said, well, that's wonderful news.
Well, this is an occasion in which he and I agree.
The furnace man.
The furnace man,
That there are no ghosts in that house.
Did you sensitive?
Did you ever have like a desire? Was that ever of interest to you? The whole ghost stories
stuff? Yeah, totally. I told ghost stories with other friends, you know.
Well, the house that I grew up in, which you knew very well, certainly probably had ghosts if any house ever had ghosts.
My grandparents' house. I mean, it had a huge library with a secret door. It was big
like you pull a book back and it tilts,
that, but and it wasn't that thrilling because the secret door went to a room for planting in the garden, like a sink.
It's nice to have one of those planting tables with a hole in the table for the dirt. And
it was just a big rambling house with, you know, a spire. There was like a pitched spire roof over at one point.
Yes. Many people who lived there, including me, had creepy feelings, including my mother, who was very unimaginative, got nervous sometimes when she was alone in that house.
Well, see, this is the thing is, a good portion of what is around us right now is because of me noodling around in those back closets in the guest bedroom, the one where that had like your ex-husband's telegraph equipment in it.
Oh, yes.
And like finding that stuff at the age of 7 or 8. And it's like, you know, it was the 70s, so no one's wondering where the kids are. So I just grab a flashlight and go up into the attic and into this crawl space deep in the back and sort of look through this stuff. And it was amazing.
Well, it's funny. That mirrors a lot. My dad's mom's house, and dad's house for that matter, but was a rambling farmhouse that they had built and then added on to. Right. And they ended up, like, my dad's room when he was a kid was the attic, which was all... what are the dormers, I guess? It had dormered edges, so it was the only place you could stand up all the way was right in the middle of the room or in the dormers. And there were all these little closets that were just like you'd open a piece of plywood, basically, and then there'd be all the way to the edge of the roof.
Yeah.
And that was far out as you could crawl. There would be stuff in there.
Yeah.
And it was all amazing to like an 8-year-old or 10-year-old.
Yeah. It's a reason to hoard.
Don't you think that houses have auras on some level? I mean, I do think that grandparents' house had a sort of an aura, which was a little off.
They have voices, right? Like the kind of the way the house settles and makes noise. Every house has its own set of noises.
But there's that. But I also think, I mean, for example, our house, I when the guy told me there were no ghosts, I completely agreed. That house never felt creepy no matter what time of day or night you were there. Whereas my parents' house felt a little odd a lot of the time. And when I sold it to some people, after a couple of years, I said to them, do you ever feel anything when you're in that house? And they said, oh, you mean the ghosts?
Oh.
Well, but I mean...
Goodbye.
Like but the places that I've been, I've only been a couple of places that creeped me out like that when I was staying in a house. And usually you can pinpoint to something, right? Like the refrigerator hums in a way that's kind of unsettling on a low level, or the house is creaky when nobody's walking around, or it's drafty or whatever. I don't think I've ever had one that I couldn't figure out what was bothering me. I mean, I some houses, like the ratio of window size to wall space is all jacked up and they're scary.
Look,
I mean, I also think that houses do have, I'm not going to say auras, but they have an attitude, and that's based on the people that put them together and hold them together. And that makes a difference. I move into a space, like this space looked mostly like this within 6 months of me moving in.
This space.
Yeah. And it looked like that because I like to move in and take control over my space. And Julia will tell you when we moved into the talking room, when we shoot the talking room, we shoot it in the library in my house here in San Francisco. And I had the books of that library up on the first day of our move because I like to inhabit. And I think of the house as an extension of the people who live there, and it wants to welcome people. And you know, my grandparents, your parents, were not the most welcoming. They weren't ungracious. They weren't ungenerous. But they did not build a house that was like, come in and take a load off and relax by the fire.
Well, but they didn't build that house. And the woman who did build that house was actually a very sort of stiff person you wouldn't really want to have a conversation with. who used to come for 2 weeks every year and sort of tell them what to do. And I remember one time as a child, she was in the living room and I was sitting there and I don't think she noticed me. And she's talking to herself and she said, I built this house to be austere.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay. Wow.
But so she also said one of the most wonderful things anybody ever said to me when she was 80. I was about 12 and I said to her, Mrs. Robbins, what is it like to be 80? And she said, oh, I just remember what a fool I was at 70.
That's great.
That's the best. I recently did that to my son, to Thing 2. I was telling him about the future, and I'm like, all right, so you've been in your school now for 3 years. Remember your first year here? And he's like, yeah. And I'm like, were you a little bit of an idiot? And he was like, oh, yeah. And I'm like, there's like a lot that you would change if you knew, right? And he's like, yeah. And I'm like, that process is going to continue for the rest of your
life.
It just
gets worse and worse the longer you go.
Yeah. Hopefully, there are people who don't do that process, and that's a problem.
I guess, but luckily I don't know many of them.
So we talked about driving a couple of months ago.
Yeah.
And were you the one that taught Adam how to drive?
I did.
I would like to hear about this. Because he had some fairly aggressive thoughts about teaching his children to drive.
Oh, well.
Nothing bad, but like I'm just curious to see if they mirror and...
And by the way, while we're saying this, my son, Thing 2, is taking... He took the car.
He took the Precious?
The Prius, and he is... I have some problems with that Prius, by the way. We're going to talk about that in just a second.
Okay.
But he took he's driving the Prius alone by himself around the city.
Yeah, well, I want you to know when I came out here at Christmas, he met me at the airport.
Yeah, that's nice.
By himself.
It's like a free Uber.
Totally amazing. Yeah. But anyway, sorry, what are your questions? No,
teaching Adam how to drive, I will tell you one thing, which I was just actually mentioned yesterday. Adam's biggest problem as a naive driver was that he had a terrible time with stop signs. He would just sort of go right through them.
Like not notice them at all?
Not notice them at all.
That's the problem with the city infrastructure, right?
The irony that he now lives in the city with the most stop signs in the world.
Oh, yeah.
And he's gotten very good at it. Now he always stops.
Well, when I first moved here, I blew through stop signs all the time because they'd just paint stop on the road with a line and there'd be no sign that you could see.
Well, a friend of mine taught me that in places like San Francisco where trees often grow over the stop sign, you've got to look both to your right, and, but also to the back left to see if you can see the octagon.
Yeah.
Right. And I look across the street too. Like if there's going to stop sign the opposite direction.
The good news is if they're four way, then as long as three people stop, it works out, right?
I also taught Adam on a stick shift.
Okay.
Because that's all we had. I love stick shift. And one of the things he did have a problem with, which everybody has a problem with, is when you stop on a hill.
Oh, that's how I failed my first driver's test.
I had the most embarrassing moment of my learning to drive experience. Parked on a hill with a bunch of kids from school behind me, my mom in the passenger seat. And it was a car that didn't have a handle.
Oh,
it was
shit.
It was a foot emergency brake.
Oh, shit.
So you couldn't use it. No, you just had to do it.
Oh.
And it took four or five or, I mean, it seemed like we were there for an hour and a half.
Oh God.
But so there were girls there.
In my, But in my first driver's test, I came to this steep hill and this giant 18 wheeler pulls right up behind me. You know, I can see nothing but a grill in my rearview mirror. And I'm trying to, and basically, the long and the short of it is my driving tester had to pull my emergency brake, which turns out to be an automatic fail.
Yeah. If they have to reach over and grab controls.
That is not something I have a problem with anymore. I mean, in San Francisco.
20 years in San Francisco will do that.
But you were very cast down when you failed that first test. It was terrible. I my heart broke for you.
No, nobody
jumps
the first
time. They still have
that
time period between when you can take the first test and the next test?
Yeah, I think it was like 6 weeks, five weeks.
So really?
we borrowed an automatic from our neighbors across the street. So here, let me talk about this Prius for a second.
Yeah.
I built a dog bed for the back seat. And it's a lovely car, drives really well. But it also wants to tell you about things that are near you.
For example, like when you're parking,
it has this great feature in the passenger side view mirror. If there's a car in your blind spot, the mirror lights up with a little orange light to let you know.
Your car does that, right?
No.
Okay.
It's great. But if you're making a left and there's someone crossing the street, it can actually tell that that's a person and it beeps at you.
That's nice.
Yes, that is okay. Yesterday, I was merging with traffic and basically it was in one of those San Francisco things. I'm merging onto Goff or Franklin. And so there's three lanes, four lanes, multiple lanes.
Yeah.
But my lane has no cars in it, but there's cars in the other lane. So I move to get out and my car won't let me. My car puts on the brakes like, there's cars in your way. You can't go forward.
It actually
put on the brake and this light came up.
You have to be able to turn that off, right?
And then it gets better.
Is this a new car?
This is a brand new car. Okay. Then it gets better. I think the Prius is about 3 or 4 or 5 inches wider than any of our other cars. It's wider, which means parking it in our garage in the Mission is non-trivial, especially because it lights up every sensor on the car.
Did you have to do the back end?
No, but even going forward, beeps and diagrams of your car and things
you're
in its
a
way.
Science fiction film
screaming at you the entire time you're trying to park.
Well, so when I was really close to buying an electric car last year and decided not to at the last minute for reasons we don't need to get into, but several of them I drove had all the driving assist stuff, like the thing that'll maintain distance between the car in front of you when you're in traffic on like a surface street, not even on the freeway. They'll do like, it'll pick up the speed limit and beeps at you when you're going faster than the speed limit. And, and like that, especially the driving assist when you're in traffic, I'm not sure how, like, it's a good idea, I know, but if you have to switch back and forth between one car and another and one car has it and the other doesn't, like, I can see it being a really, really easy thing to just rear end the hell out of somebody.
We're going
to
look back on this as the time before autonomous cars.
I mean, that's the end result.
Totally.
Yeah.
At least it doesn't have a thing which says, Adam, what are you thinking?
But it kind of does. When a big light comes on and says, brake, brake. And you go, I didn't. And it says, no, we took care of it for you.
I'm fine with the machine thinking for me if the machine's demonstrably smarter than I am. Like, if it's playing Go, I feel like that's probably okay.
Really, that's your example.
Yeah, like, I'm a terrible Go player. I really don't even understand the basics of the rules. I'm going to let the machine do that for me. But, you know, driving the car, I can corner the eye. I know when my blind spots are empty.
I want a Siri which says things like, you never listen. You never do what I tell you.
You want passive aggressive well Siri.
That's the Woody Allen joke. He says, I've never had very good luck with appliances. I have a tape recorder. It costs $200. And as I talk into it, it says, I know.
I think that's as good a place as any to call this one a show. Norm, what's going on in Tested this week?
Well,
do you know what week this is?
Yes, this will be, we were just at Silicon Valley Comic Con, so I have some content from there coming out on the site, some interesting builds, so stay tuned for that.
Okay. Karin, thank you for coming by.
Thanks,
it was good to see you again. Yeah. And we'll be back next week with more still untitled Beyond Savage Project.
Bye, guys.
Bye.